You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
The APN is currently looking for network sponsors. Hear your company right here at the beginning of the show in over 60 episodes a month on 18 different shows and reach 70,000 subscribers. Contact the APN via chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. That's chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com to sponsor the only archaeology education and outreach podcast network. Hello and welcome to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 60. I'm your host, Chris Webster, with my co-host today, Richie Cruz. On today's show, we talk about our technology wish list. What would we love to have for archaeology if money, time, and technical ability had nothing to do with it? Let's get to it. All right, so welcome back to the Archaeotech Podcast. I've actually got a new, I think he's going to be permanent, co-host coming soon. By the name of Paul Zimmerman, but we're working out schedules. He works at a private school over in New York, but I'm bringing him on, and hopefully soon we'll have a more regular, I guess, Archaeotech. Since Chris Sims left us, it's been a little up in the air. But thankfully, I have that lives like what, 3 blocks away from me. Mr. Richie Cruz, who's been filling in for the Archaeotech podcast co-host. So welcome to the show, Richie.
Ah, thanks for having me back.
No problem. So Richie, actually, I thought we had an episode ready for this week, but it turns out I don't. Richie, it was over here doing some work for me today for the Archaeology Podcast Network, doing some editing and stuff. And I was saying, man, I'm going to be out of town next week. As we're recording this, it's August 17th, I think, and I'm going to Podcast Movement next week in Los Angeles. So while you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on the day that it released on Thursday, yeah. I'm actually at the first podcast conference I've ever gone to, and the biggest podcast conference in the country, if not the world.
I'm kind of surprised that's your first one.
Well, you know, I've had for the last few years that the APN has been getting more. Well, the APN's only been around 2.5 years, but for the last 2 years, I've been focusing on other things at archaeology conferences, and they're expensive to go to.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I don't know. This podcast conference, Podcast Movement, just like the SAAs, moves around the country.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've been aware of it that it's been on this side of the country. I just found out about it a couple months ago. I was like, holy crap, it's in Los Angeles. That's pretty easy to get to.
Yeah.
So.
Relatively.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier than like DC to get to, or at least cheaper anyway, you know, which true. I think it was in Florida last year. And I don't know how the SAAs did it, but I vowed never to return to Florida. So sorry, Floridians. Anyway, so not to take up too much time here with all that little BS, but I wanted to say where we're at and what's going on. So it turns out we didn't have an episode for next week, and Richie and I were talking, and he had a great idea to talk about our technology wish list. Like, what do we if nothing was an impediment and we could just create whatever we wanted, what would we want for archaeology that currently doesn't exist, or at least doesn't exist in a way that works and is efficient? Because some of the stuff on my list we're going to talk about exists and people are working on it, but it's not to a level that we're talking about for the wish list.
Yeah.
You know, so it was your idea, Richie. Why don't you go first?
Well, for me, it's more practical, like stuff you find. Like, for instance, the Trimble, the giant yellow box that we all use. Like, I have used those a lot, and I've had many thoughts about them.
Yeah.
Like, how often have you gotten to the end of the day as just out of juice?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and there's that big giant, like, yellow panel right on the top where it just says Trimble. And I've always thought, man, wouldn't that be way more awesome if it had a solar panel so it could top it off? It wouldn't necessarily keep it charged or charge it up, but it would be enough to get you through the whole day.
It might help it discharge less.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you couldn't fit it like a huge solar panel up there. No. And I would wonder, because that's where the antenna is too.
That's true.
And that's why we always hold it out. And that's why a solar panel would be good right there, because it's always being held out. But I would wonder, you know, would a solar panel negatively affect the antenna reception? If you're using the backpack Trimble, you know, the backpack antenna. I know. If you're using that, then you're not using the onboard antenna, then that's fine. But if you're using the antenna that's on the device, then I don't know if that would cause a problem or not. And I'm not sure, you know, as solar, this is good for future tech too, because as solar panels get more efficient and get better, smaller and smaller solar panels would be able to charge up more and more. Because, I mean, I don't know what their efficiency numbers are up to, but if I had to guess, it's probably 20, 30% in most cases. Because you just can't capture everything and keep it. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Oh, man. One other thing I just thought about.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you're always scrambling across rocks. For people out there who have never done this in real life, CRM archaeology in real life.
Yeah.
Like, let me go about it my usual roundabout way. Like, I once knew someone who would just whip out their GPS, turn it on, find out where they were, turn it off, and then keep going. But that's not the way you use it in real life.
No.
You have to constantly look at it and read it and look at your position. But when you're crawling across rocks and everyone else has got their little kind of garments and then you've got the giant Trimble, it's like, were you there when a certain someone just came down right on it and put his hand out and caught himself on a rock, but using the Trimble face?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that more than a few times. It happened on my project. One of the times happened on my project. It was one of our guys. But because that's the way you hold the Trimble. You have the little hand strap.
Yeah,
and you trip and fall, and what do? You put your hands out in front of you with the screen out.
But how awesome would it be if TerraSync or ArcPad had an iPad or an iWatch?
An Apple Watch
app, or just an Android Wear app.
Yeah.
That way you could just look down, just like a Garmin watch, or just like your Apple Watch right now has GPS. But
well, I'll tell you what, there's some of the things you can do to mitigate having to look at the Trimble. Like you can put it in the holster or something like that. Now, it tends to lose satellites or lose effectiveness if it loses too many satellites. It's not it's not like a Garmin, which will work on, you know, just a very few satellites or even your smartphone. Your smartphone's usually only picking up a couple of satellites, but you know, the Trimble requires more satellites because of the precision factor.
Yeah.
So if you knew a lot about it, you I'm pretty sure you could God, I totally lost my train of thought. No, I'm pretty sure you could basically reduce your precision on that so it doesn't need as many satellites.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how far down you can go because I honestly don't know enough about that. However, my thinking is why do you... When you're on survey, why do you have the Trimble out all the time? Because people are anchoring off of you typically, and you're looking at the coordinates, right?
Yeah.
Like everybody else is. Most people these days on a Western survey, probably every single one of them has a GPS.
True.
Okay. Not all the time, but a lot of times. And it's really easy for GIS departments to export KML files that you can load into any GPS, including your phone, so everybody can have the shapefile boundaries for the project area, which is really important too. Because here's what I'm going with that.
Yeah.
I have several smartphone applications that will, one of them is MotionX GPS. That's a really good one. And there's GPS Trax.
Yeah.
Both really good GPS applications. You can switch them to NAT83 or NAT27, whatever you're using, probably NAT83. For the datum, and then you can see the coordinates right away. I can see UTM coordinates on my Apple Watch. Now, what I haven't seen, and here's part of my wish list on this whole topic, what I haven't seen is the ability to do basically what sailors would call anchor drag. There's an anchor drag feature in most Garmin GPSs, and it's intended for navigation. And what that means is you drop anchor on your boat, and you let the boat drift to where it's going to drift naturally in whatever direction it's going to drift. And then you know the length of the line on your anchor. And when that pulls tight and your anchor sinks itself in, because the anchor will dig itself in, now the boat's just going to sit there. Well, you know, the wind could shift or something. It could float all the way around the other side of the anchor in a circle. So you set your anchor drag to basically a little more than the radius of that circle that your boat will create. And then when your boat drags too far, you'll know that you either broke your line and you're just drifting, or your anchor has unseated itself and is just dragging across the bottom of the ground, and you'll start getting alarms in your GPS. Now, I've tried to use anchor drag on survey before, because you can do basically like an anchor drag that's kind of like a coarse drag, but it's not fine enough. Like if you're walking down a survey line, I want it to buzz on my wrist every time I get too far off my line.
Wait.
And I haven't found anything that's really designed for archaeology, because if you're using a smartphone, it's not precise enough. Like I want to know when I'm 5 meters off my line, not when I'm, you know, 50 meters off my line.
Yeah.
If I'm 50 meters off my line, I'm on your line.
Ooh. So, and how often does that happen?
I know. Well, it happens a lot. you know, what I want is more precision, and I want. Ideally, I'd love my watch to be to like buzz, to like tap on the left or right side of me. I know some of the bigger Samsung smartwatches. Yeah. I can't remember which one. They do have left and right buzz for like directions.
Really?
It's the taptic tap on your wrist. The Apple Watch, I don't think, can do that because it's too small. You know, you wouldn't notice whether it's on the left or right. It needs a little poker to come out and tap me on the thing. But anyway, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
And the whole point of saying all that is that if 99% of the time on survey, when you're just actually walking, the only reason you're looking at the Garmin is for the boundary.
Yes.
Solved by the smartphone. Done. Yeah. All of my field techs had KML boundaries in their tablets that I gave them. So they could look at where we were at any time. Yeah. And that was using, I think that was within the MotionX GPS application. They could pull it up. They could find their UTMs because I didn't give everybody GPSs. Yeah. They all had tablets.
Yeah.
And it was good enough GPS to navigate.
Yeah.
So if you're looking down to it for shapefiles, for borders, you're done. We solved that. You can do it on a tablet or a smartphone. If you're looking at it just for your coordinates, that's super easy. You don't need sub-meter coordinates to do your survey. You're not that good. And I don't expect people to walk a straight freaking as an arrow line anyway. True. I'd rather you drifted a little bit and checked out your area. You're responsible for, if you got a 30-meter transect, you're responsible for not the 5 meters in front of you. You're responsible for the entire 30 meters, right? Now, that doesn't mean you need to go weave back and forth 30 meters. You are responsible for, I mean, because the whole point of doing our survey is we're doing a sample anyway.
Yeah.
So we need to find, we're looking for bigger stuff that crosses these paths, right?
Yeah.
We record isolates because it's ethical to do so, but we're not out there really to record isolates. You know, we just can't see something and not record it. Anyway, that's where I would go with that. So I think you could take your Trimble.
Yeah.
You could probably power it down.
Yeah.
And you could probably put it away until you have to record a sight.
Some people do that.
The only other problem is the Trimble takes a while to power back up and gain its satellites. So if you're finding a lot of isolates and you're stopping a lot, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
But if you've got, say, I mean, if you had a couple of them out there, you could just keep the Trimble in the holster and keep it on. And then, you know, when you get to sight recording, the other Trimble, you could just power that up or the one that's in the holster for isolates. Yeah. It doesn't take nearly as long once you pull it back out for it to fully acquire.
No.
So I think we solved it.
Yay.
But we just need an app that's got finer control on like transect navigation.
See.
You know, so.
Plus, more importantly, why do I want to look down at a Garmin, like my own personal Garmin, when I'm like, you know, transecting?
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, and I find too, that when I've used the coordinates on my wrist.
Yeah.
I tend to less walk around like Dick Tracy and have my arm out in front of me, just looking at my coordinates. And also, if I hold my arm out for too long, my watch face just goes blank again.
Oh.
So I've got to bring my arm down and bring it back up or tap on it.
Yeah.
And I find that when people have a GPS, rather than just bouncing off of somebody else, this is why I'd rather not as many people had it. They stare at it.
Yes.
Like they're obsessed with staying on transect.
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, I don't want you to go over the boundary line. That could be, you could be in trouble for that for more reasons than not, you know, depending on the client. But, you know, I don't want you going over the edge, but there's only one person on that crew that should be looking for the edge, you know, and that's whoever has, you know, whoever said I'm in control of this survey group, usually the crew chief, unless they designate someone, hey, you watch the map and let us know when we're at the boundary of the survey area, you know? So it's, I mean, I'd rather it was on a watch so you could just put your phone away, but you're reading your coordinates and I don't even need the phone for the coordinates on my watch anymore because the Series 2 Apple Watch has onboard GPS.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, it's good enough for transect navigation. It's probably, even if you're 3 to 5 meters off, which is the typical accuracy of those things, that's good enough for transect navigation.
Also makes me think of how I learned how to survey, which was, you know, one person on the end had, you know, the GPS, and then everyone just kind of lined everything up off compasses.
Nice. Yeah, totally.
Although, of course, then you learn that compass that people can't line themselves up off compasses.
That's a whole other story. Yeah. When I was first working in the Southeast doing shovel testing, we didn't have any GPS to line us up at all. Yeah. Because most of the project areas out there that I worked on, in fact, all of them, were bisected heavily by either roads or fences or property lines.
Yeah.
Something gave you something to go from and to.
Yeah.
So we would just look at we usually had pretty good satellite maps that we'd use. And we'd say, okay, we're going to walk from this road to this road. And we're going to go at a perpendicular angle from this road so we can hit this one. And then you need to know what compass orientation that is. So you need to take your... your compass and figure out what angle is this road. Okay, what's 90 degrees to that? Yeah. And then do some math. And
more important, but there's also the other factor, the fact that people tend to walk with the topography.
Yeah, well, yeah,
so
they
do. So if you got a landform coming up and it's like 45 degrees to where you're walking, people will almost immediately start veering off. Like, how many times has that happened?
I know. Somebody needs to keep on track. Somebody needs to keep everybody on track. So you need an anchor that is actually paying attention, you know, but everybody else should just be walking and occasionally looking to their side.
And more importantly, someone who can keep up, because every once in a while you give the tremble to someone and they're like way behind you. And like, where are you?
Well, and that goes into a philosophy of survey regardless. It's like I have a I'm in the Civil Air Patrol, and we're talking about ground team a lot lately. And for our ground team, like, for example, we talk about speed of the ground team moving and then qualifications. You always default to whoever is the slowest and has the lowest qualifications. That's the level of qualifications for your ground team. Because that's what you should do on surveys. So many people just want to get out there and not admit that people have different abilities and skills.
True.
You know, if you have somebody that's walking too slow, you have two options. You either walk at that pace, and the whole survey crew does, and if you tell them to speed up and they don't, then you walk at that pace. Your second option is to fire them and hire somebody that walks faster but can still do the work. You know, because walking fast, you can also have people that walk too fast because their only goal, they've lost sight of the whole entire reason they're out there. Yeah. Their only goal is to go from point A to point B. And you're finding out that they're not finding anything, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, if they work the whole day and everybody else is finding stuff and they're not, there's a problem there. You know, that goes down to crew chief, you know, management and leadership ability. So, I've got something I wanted to actually start with, but we've only got a couple minutes left in this first segment. So because we were already kind of talking about it, I want to just bring it up. So smartwatches, the Apple Watch 3 that's supposed to be coming out is going to be even more similar to some already available watches on the market, where it'll be a standalone watch. Now, I'm saying that with confidence because Apple leaks these days are pretty pretty huge. So everybody thinks that the new Apple Watch will be completely standalone. You don't need a phone. I mean, obviously, if you have your phone, you'll get notifications and stuff. But if it's completely standalone, my guess is it's going to have a data plan. It'll have a different shape to it. It'll probably get better GPS reception because it'll use the cell towers as a correcting measure, almost like differential correction almost, because cell towers are static and you know, the watch is moving. That would really help, I think, a lot of these Western survey crews to have something like that, because maybe you don't want your smartphone out and accessible because you might drop it. It might get wet, depending on where you're at. You know, you might want to throw it away in your backpack and not have to worry about it draining its battery either when you're running GPS on your watch the whole time. Because the watch uses less power to begin with, even if it's running GPS. True. And this new Series 2 watch that I've got, I mean, I've run, my wife and I did a hike a few weeks ago, and I was running a track and a workout. So it was taking my heart rate consistently for 6 hours. And I still had like 60% battery life when we got done with that.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. Normal daily use, just using the watch, you know, not anything spectacular. I'll do like a 30-minute workout in the morning, so it's tasking it there. And then just normal use throughout the day.
Yeah.
I've usually got 80% by the end of the day. So it's really good battery life on these watches these days. Really good battery life. So I think a standalone watch with similar battery life would really change the field a lot if people used it. So.
Well, you know, recently I was actually thinking about retiring my Garmin in favor of the Garmin watch. The Phoenix.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Not that those are cheap, but then in other words, the GPS I have now.
Yeah. And I'm surprised you don't see more of those because they've been around for a little while. You know? I mean, it's a Garmin watch, and it keeps people's eyes off the device. And if all you're using the handheld for is to see where your coordinates are, you're not recording with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really need that.
And the crazy part is that what I use now, my DeLorme, was $500 when I bought it.
Yeah.
And the Garmin Phoenix is $500.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, or the Casio, I always forget what they call it, but there's a Casio like smartwatch too.
Right. All right. Well, that's it for segment one. We've got a lot more to talk about, which judging by how long we talked about that, we'll get to like two of them. But either way, it's nice and fun. And don't forget our third segment is the app of the day segment, where we're going to talk about the apps we'd like to see out there, you know, our future apps, not actual apps that are out there now. So back in a minute.
All these things we make no apology are the study of archaeology. But we don't do dinosaurs.
Did aliens build Stonehenge? Did the Easter Island statues walk? Did the Vikings colonize Midwest America? What does mainstream archaeology have to say about all of this? Listen to the Archaeological Fantasies podcast and learn about popular archaeological mysteries, hoax or fact. Learn to tell the difference with Dr. Kenneth Fader and co-host Sarah of the Archie Fantasies blog. Check out the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/Archie Fantasies and get ready to think critically. Let's get back to the show.
Funny beady blokes, you will see, are a staple of archaeology.
Okay, we're back. And just in case we forget, I want to bring up the first thing that I wrote down on this thing, because some people may not want to hear this. Some people probably won't care. And some people might think that we've already solved this problem. But the first thing that I wrote down when I thought about doing this segment was... actual working field recording software that you don't have to learn. And I need to qualify that statement. What I mean by that is I want to live in a world where that's just the thing that you pull out of your bag is a tablet of some sort or your smartphone, more likely. I mean, I'm probably not going to use a tablet much anymore forever. I mean, my iPhone 7 Plus does just as well as your average tablet. So, and it has a better camera on it than the iPad Mini 4.
It's almost as big.
And it's almost as big. Yeah. So, And there is, you know, there's a handful of field recording software applications out there. You know, Codify is coming online, but I don't know what they've done in the last, you know, probably 3 months. They've been a sponsor of this show, which we appreciate. But, you know, go check them out if you want to see what they're doing nowadays. But and then there's WildNote, who we interviewed recently. But none of these things are... honestly, none of these things are exactly what I've been looking for my whole life, you know, since I got an iPad. So 7-8 years ago, it was, 7 years ago. Anyway, it's just, everything is super close though, you know, like really, really, really close. But I just want to pull something out of the box that, you know, similar to, you hand a monkey clipboard and paper and a pen and they could probably figure it out, you know, and that's what we need for archaeology.
Well, I mean, to put it in conceptual terms for people who are listening, it's almost like iTunes. You don't have to be taught how to do iTunes. You don't need a tutorial. You just go, you click on the album and then you click on the song and it plays.
Right.
And I feel like what you're talking about is like, it looks like the iMac. You just click on it, you write it out, and then you hit export and then it exports as an iMac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I've been asking for, man, and that's what I've been trying to build too. Is something like that, and you know, my dream has always been a single input recording form across the country.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter where you're at. The app knows where you're at, so it'll automatically adjust your fields for you.
Yeah.
And say, okay, you know, we're gonna change your drop downs to match where you're at. We're gonna maybe take some things away, add some things to your screen.
Yeah.
As we build your project, and you just say new project, it knows where you're at. You could change it if you want, you know, that'd be nice because maybe you have a big company and you're planning your project in Utah for Nevada, you know, something like that. So, but anyway, you know, that seamless integration between the tablet and the field and you know, backups and all that stuff, that we don't have to have these tutorials and all these things on use this and this and this if you want to do that, and use these things if you want to do that. No, I want it all in one application and I don't want to get out of that application ever.
Yeah.
And I want it all to work right there. And that doesn't exist right now.
No. And you know? Just to head off some people are going to be listening to this and, you know, say something that they think is obvious. Why not just put the form in Word and just write in there?
Yeah. Because if you've ever tried to edit a Word document and had things move around and stuff like that, you know exactly why the answer to that question is hell no.
Yeah. It's not data. There's no way to database it.
Word documents aren't data.
Yeah.
You know, until we have some sort of, because that's a good point. Yeah. Until we have some sort of smart, you know, machine learning type of stuff where it can just look at anything and then make data out of that.
Yeah.
But we don't have that either. You know, I mean, somebody has that, but we don't have that. So, but why not? But why do that when we can enter it into an interface that creates data in the background, you know, a database, and then you have multiple output formats. You know, you can output right to your GIS system. You can write right into forms, right into some sort of analysis. You know, it'd be nice to know in the field. Yeah, it'd be nice to know in the field, like on a big site, We recorded this one site out in near Ridgecrest, California, that had, I think, 160 some odd features.
Yeah.
And they were all different kinds of features. They were all lithic features. It was a quarrying area. And it would have been nice to be able to query that really easily and say, okay, what do I have here?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, not to like draw it offline, but to say that recently when I was going to Amazon, I was looking at the reviews. There's like they managed to pull out keywords from all the reviews for various things.
Nice.
That way you could see patterns and what people thought about the machine, about whatever you were looking at. It almost sounds like what you're talking about is like you want to look for patterns, so it would automatically pull patterns. So like this area is predominantly like placer mining, or this area is predominantly like shaft mining, stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's not that many like themes, we call it, in archaeology, that in certain regions.
Yeah.
You know, like you look at reports from out here in the Great Basin, and all the research themes are pretty much, you know, a distillation of one of like 10 things, right?
Yeah.
So you could teach a machine to do that. You could teach an application to automatically look for those patterns that you're already finding. And anything that doesn't fit that pattern is probably going to be significant in its own right, you know, because it doesn't fit that pattern. And I'd want to know specifically, not necessarily what fits these patterns and these themes, but what doesn't, you know, because that's the important thing.
Oh, my God. It's like survey where I was taught, you know, look for the thing that doesn't belong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So... all right. So, you know, moving on here, I also wrote down augmented reality. but augmented reality exists. And in fact, Apple had a pretty long segment in their last keynote about augmented reality and iOS 11 and the new Mac OS High Sierra that's coming out. And so augmented reality is not new. I mean, one of the first apps I got for my smartphone was called Layer or something like Layar. It was like something weird. Yeah. And basically you could choose these different layers that people would build into the application.
Yeah.
And you could hold it up and see through your camera and see like mountain peaks and stuff like that.
Neat.
And in fact, a lot of people don't know this, but Yelp currently has a feature, like a little radar-like feature where you can hold your phone up and look through the camera at businesses and see Yelp information come out about the business like that. But I want to see all this stuff in my eyes. I want to see this stuff on my glasses. I like the thought of Google Glass, and there's other things coming online. The problem with most of these is they're not either if they're wireless, the wireless transfer is not good enough for some things.
Yeah.
And the really good ones are wired. So, you know, they're wired to like a smartphone or they're wired to a tablet that's in your backpack, but you've got this wire coming off of your glasses.
True.
And also the battery life of the glasses isn't that good either. So,
oh my God. Imagine being able to look through your glasses and be able to see the project area boundaries.
Yeah.
Like in highlighted in a different color or topographic lines.
I mean, better yet too, my vision for this, and I even wrote a blog post about this probably 5 years ago where I sketched out what I thought these things should look like. Cause I imagined, so we were talking earlier about coordinates and following coordinates. Well, I want to see a big, thick green line that's probably 5 meters wide overlaid on the ground. They do this in football. Why can't they do that in my face, right?
Ooh.
So I want to see a big 5 meter wide green line that says this is your survey area. When I walk outside of that, I'm not paying attention. Like, so you'll get desensitized to it probably. I want the rest of the world to turn red or something like that, you know? And when I see... So the several things I'd like to see on survey, I'd like to see that big green line. I'd like to be able to look up and see a big red wall and make it like some of those like Pokemon simulations or some of those things where it's like dark red on the bottom and fades out up to the top, you know, something like that. And I think that would be really cool. But then also I'd like to see previously recorded and currently recorded stuff.
Thing.
Yeah. So, because as we move forward in time, we're going to be recording things that already has GIS data.
Yeah.
So, because right now the rule in Nevada is if it's over 10 years old, we re-record it. Well, stuff from 2007 probably has GIS data, and it probably has sub-meter GIS data. So when you think about that, if I'm taking that information and I can get that from the BLM or whoever and put that into my system, I can just be walking around and not have to worry, oh shit, were we supposed to be looking at the GPS for this previously recorded site? Yeah. No, it's in my field of vision right now and I can see it and I can see all the artifacts. I can see the features.
And more importantly, you could use it to see mismatches, like, because sometimes people plot things like just like on a map, just like guessing. So you can look at it. It's supposed to look like this in your glasses, but you look, you're there. It's not, it's clearly not there. So you can just walk to where it matches up.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I think that'd be great. And then the other thing with the augmented reality for site recording.
Yeah.
And then there's a third application for shovel testing. But for site recording, I imagine as a crew chief, because not everybody would need these. No. You know, the crew could probably put their glasses away when they get to site recording and then take them out when they want to see an update. But my thinking is you have real-time update in the field as people are recording things. So if you're recording stuff on tablets, you're creating data.
Yeah.
The data for those tablets could either, you know, when we have better batteries, they could either continuously be transmitting out or you could selectively transmit out when you need to. Like when you finish a feature, you finish an artifact, you hit the button, it transfers to the crew chief's device, which transfers to their augmented reality. So when I'm sitting there writing up my site record, I'll see a little bing, bing, you know, up in my thing. And I'll look up and I'll see this, like, you know, shooting thing up and it's Richie just finished a feature, you know. So now I know that's done, and I can see the ones that Richie still has to get done.
Yeah,
I'm really thinking about, what was the name of that movie that came out that was based on the book series? It was the kids. They use kids for warfare. They train them up.
Wait, you mean Ender's Game?
Ender's Game.
Yeah,
I've read most of those books, and they are like they didn't really show this very well in the movies. Yeah. I thought. Well, in the books. Most people, whether they're no matter what they're doing, they're wearing some kind of headset, and they use blinking. They use like combinations of blinks, like two or three blinks in rapid succession. Because it's doing eye tracking movements. So if I look over in the screen on here and I go blink, 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 that's a select, you know, and then I can go blink, blink, and then move my eyes over and drag something over here.
Yeah,
and I'm manipulating stuff on my screen, but I'm also seeing. So that's virtual reality. I'm seeing things that aren't there. Overlaid on basically nothing.
Yeah.
But augmented reality is things interacting with your surroundings.
Yeah.
So that's where you could see that too. And I'd like to be able to see, you know, to just be standing there on site and, you know, I see a different colored flag pop up because you're out recording artifacts, let's say, or you're recording features and you find something we didn't find on survey. Now this pops up and it's not something we knew of before.
Yeah.
Maybe you give it a different name or different designation like that. And I can instantly pull the data for that because you've already transmitted it and see it without walking all the way over there and checking it out.
More practically, it can also change color based on who has recorded what there. Because how many times have you been like, you know, has this been recorded? Has this been photographed?
Yeah. And that'd be nice to like filter your results, I guess, is what you're saying. Because I'd like to see standard colors. Like people try to do this with pin flags, but it almost never works out. I'd like to see standard colors, like the site recording boundary is blue or something, and then your artifacts are red, your non-diagnostic artifacts are another color, your features are a color. But then I can either using my input device, whatever that would be, or blinks would be nice. I could say, well, show me the things that were assigned to Richie. And what has he done, and show me what he's got left to do. You know, then I don't have to bug you and take you away from your job. And I don't have to walk over there traipsing over the site. One thing that really irritates me, especially about these Western Playa sites, is you just destroy the ground when you walk over them. I mean, there's no way the site's ever going to be the same.
No.
You could have hundreds of flakes out there and things like that. And now they're all, in the next rainstorm, they're all going to fall into your footholes that are everywhere because you had to walk all over the site to do it. The more you can minimize doing that, the better. And for like you even said, Richie, one of the things we were trying to avoid on my last project was too many people hitting one object. And what usually happens on a site is one person will record it, another will take a picture, and another will take a GPS point. Everybody should have that capability in their one device.
Yeah.
So you do all the things and nobody else has to go back to that.
Oh my God. Almost like a tricorder.
I know,
right? Thing existed.
I know. Well, we have that. We have the ability with the smartphone to take a 12 megapixel picture, which is good enough for every agency I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
And if you use something like the Trimble R1, which will give you submeter coordinates on any Bluetooth device, then you can now get submeter coordinates for that, and you can record it on the phone. So your phone is actually a tricorder.
Yeah.
Oh, except I love tricorder because it records like more than three things.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure. Anyway.
And more importantly, for augmented reality, it'd be, especially if it's updated in live time, you wouldn't necessarily have people crossing like different crews surveying the same land, because how many times has that happened?
Right.
Or recording the same site.
Yeah.
Or, God, this happens so often. You know, you think you finished a site, and then you go on the next transect, you shift over, and you find what you think is another site, but in reality, it just links to your first site.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. you know, I mentioned shovel testing too. One of the things that was always confusing with shovel testing, especially when you've got like big crews out there and dense vegetation and things like that. I'd love to be able to look up and see like a representation of the holes that have been excavated, the ones that haven't, the ones that are positive, and just look out across the landscape and have it overlay that in front of me.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether I can actually see those holes, you know, because of vegetation. And that will tell you where everybody is too, which is a safety feature. Because a lot of times you lose people on dense shovel testing.
And I feel like people out there who have never done shovel testing can't quite imagine it. Like you can't.
Yeah.
Like being in a swamp or in a cornfield.
Oh, it's horrific. Yeah. I mean, we did sugarcane fields, which are just as bad. They were like 12 foot tall stalks because it'd been abandoned. And you couldn't see anybody. You couldn't see anybody, you know, 10 feet to your left. Like there's nobody there.
Wait, is that where you ran those freaky spiders?
That was in a similar area, the banana spiders. Yeah, there were and alligators and wild boars. It was a horrific project.
I'd be more scared of the spiders, though.
I know. Well, they don't bite. Once I found that out, I was more okay with them because alligators have a worse bite than those spiders do. So, and the boars will just gore you. So
gross.
I know. Anyway, we only got a few minutes left. That went fast.
Yeah.
What do you have? Anything else that's really tickling your brain on something you might want to see?
Oh my God. You and I both own Tacomas, right?
Yes.
And you've got the inverter in the bed.
Right.
I've always thought that is the stupidest place for them. Like how many times have you been in the crew truck and then the first thing you do is you plug in the inverter into the cigarette lighter?
Right.
Why do I have those damn things in the cab?
That's a good question because my 4Runner had a regular 110 plug in the center console.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's but why doesn't the Tacoma?
See?
Yeah.
Or why don't work trucks in general? Because like, how many of these work trucks are used that way? Like they're used.
Well, I feel like that might be a dealership, a manufacturer issue where they're trying to get you to look at the features of the bigger models. Because I think the Tundra might have that.
Does it?
Yeah, it might. Because the Tundra has some features that you just can't get on the Tacoma. I know that. like for example, my driver's and passenger seat, they don't raise or lower.
Yeah.
And I know that's something that comes on the other models. So,
oh, wait, what else was buggy? Wasn't it like the backup camera or was it?
My backup camera has been buggy. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And it doesn't do like the.
No, but there was something that comes in the Tundra that was really annoying you.
Yeah.
I forget what
in
it was.
The Tundra?
Yes.
Oh,
that you can't get in the Tacoma.
Oh, you're right. I can't remember what that was. well, anyway, smarter vehicles would be nice in general.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a vehicle that can. We waste so much time just driving to and from the field and people are sleeping and doing all kinds of things. Yeah. I would rather just have the vehicle drive me out into the field, a self-driving vehicle to get me out in the field, navigate me right there so I can do work or we can rest, you know, we can do different things. I think that would be really, really handy. And in the last few minutes here, I wrote down artifact ID in the field, but we're getting real close to that. We interviewed Chris Cameron, who's putting together OnPoint, the name of an application that helps to identify projectile points. I haven't seen much from him lately, but presumably his application is just getting smarter and smarter. And when we can do that on a standalone smartphone in the field without connectivity, because right now it requires a lot of processing power. But like everything, it starts out really hard and gets really easy as time goes on.
Interesting.
So, and then the last thing I wrote down was subsurface non-destructive investigation. And I don't mean GPR. I don't mean all those other things that give you an indication of what's under the ground. I want like a CT scan of underneath the ground. I don't want to excavate at all. I want to be able to analyze everything that's underground and get the shape down to millimeters, you know, millimeters resolution, sub-millimeter resolution, and then have the machine learning capabilities of the device say, well, that's not a rock, that's a projectile point, or that's a bone, or that's a something. And then if we really need to go in there and take something out because the area is going to be destroyed or because, you know, we found something that that we think is really important for research and science and needs to be preserved, then we can go in there and excavate it out and bring it out. But we can pinpoint it and target it rather than spend months doing an open excavation. How many units have you dug that were completely sterile?
Almost all of them.
Right? I mean, percentage-wise, probably most of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're always trying to work around the units to try to find features. Really, that's what you're doing with an open excavation is you're looking for features.
Yeah.
And you're chasing features all over the place. And most of the time, you're just, you're finding artifacts.
Yeah.
But they're not, they're only a piece, a small piece of the puzzle. You're looking for features. It's why you're there, you know?
It's almost like the, it's almost like you're describing chemotherapy or something.
I know, right?
Like trying to chase the cancer.
Yeah, totally.
Except in this case, we're not chasing cancer. We're chasing something we actually want.
Right, right. So anyway, that's it for this segment. Send us your app wish list or your tech wish list. Yeah. You know, what would you want if money and time and technology and technical ability and know-how were no object whatsoever? I mean, we didn't say time machine because I feel like that was too obvious.
Oh.
But
or random uplifting quote generator?
I mean, every time I look at my watch, I'd like to hear an uplifting statement before I see my coordinates, honestly. You need that to make you feel better about yourself.
See?
You know, there's a gentleman that I'm pretty sure doesn't listen to this podcast, but he's in CRM and he's constantly posting negative things on his Facebook page, including like job rejections and stuff. And I'm like, dude, you're making your own, you're laying in your own bed there. Anyway, so we're going to take a break real quick and come back with our wish list app of the day segment.
Mm. Interested in archaeology? Want to hear from experts in the field about the latest discoveries and interpretations? Check out the Archaeology Show every other Saturday and let hosts Chris Webster and April Camp Whitaker take you deeper into the story. Check out the Archaeology Show at www.archpodnet.com/archaeology and subscribe, rate, and comment on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and the Google Music Store. That's www.archpodnet.com/archaeology. Now back to the show.
All right, so we're back for our fictitious app of the day segment, app of the 2 week segment. And in this segment, we're going to talk about what we wish existed if somebody would just build it and make it and have the ability to do that. So, Richie, what's your fictitious wishful app of the day?
Well, it's kind of like I want to combine several apps that I've used over the years, because one of the things I had to do in the office was do graphic design. And for people who have never done a report, graphic design is usually used to like illustrate like excavation levels and stuff like that. And so what I was using in the office was Illustrator. And then later, when I no longer had access to the office computer, I was using something that was originally called iDraw. And I was looking for a non-Apple replacement for it, and no one really makes such a thing.
Right.
Like Android, they have certain vector design apps, but they're not really meant for illustration. They're meant more for like architects to lay out a house and stuff like that. And then I also found something called Gravit Designer, which is so close, but it's also not meant for illustration. It's also really, it's really a layout app, but it's so close because it's Chrome based.
Okay.
So you could use it on your Chromebook, because I think Google is trying to position Chromebooks as like their tablet replacement, just looking at the way that people are investing in Chromebooks, the manufacturers, but they're not necessarily coming out with new Android tablets anymore. So what I really want is an illustration app that you can use on any device and send files back and forth. Because I remember when we were trying to come up with the logo for our podcast, you call this Archaeology, I tried to send it to you, and even though supposedly it's, you know, the app you're using used as standard SVGs, clearly it didn't, because I sent it as an SVG and yet you couldn't open it.
Yeah, it had problems. And that's Graphic, you know, the same one we use, because it'll export an SVG, which is, it's like a layered vectored graphic file, right?
Yeah.
And then it also actual Photoshop files. And I had somebody send me Photoshop files too, and it still didn't preserve the layers.
Yeah.
I think that's a really hard thing to do, because there's pretty smart people trying to figure that out. They're owned by Autodesk, who does CAD stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So they're not stupid. They know what they're doing, and it's a hard problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, personally. I don't know the details behind the technology.
Yeah.
But apparently that's difficult. And, you know, that really rolls into exactly what I was going to say.
Oh.
Because I think when we're talking about a wish list of apps for archaeology, we all, you know, you could probably get 10 people in a room and they might all say, well, I want a better drawing app. I want a better, you know, GPS app. I want a better app to record this. And I want an app that does dictation. I want an app that does all these different things. And I want weather, you know, that is specific to my location. And I want all these things. But what we all really want is what you just alluded to and what I alluded to in the second segment.
Yeah.
is we want an app that does everything.
Yeah.
We want one app that does everything. And the biggest problem with finding that app is A, no one's built it. Yeah. And B, processing power on the devices.
But they're getting more powerful every day.
They're getting way more powerful. And when you can start splitting power, and I don't know if this is actually happening, but when we come up with, like, for Apple, and I'm just using Apple as a circumstance, when the Apple Watch ends up with its own onboard, well, it's already got its own onboard computer, so it could actually probably do this now if somebody figured it out. I don't think Apple's thought of it yet, but it would kill the battery. But if you could share processing power with another device that's always tethered to your phone or your tablet. So why not put some processes that are happening on my tablet, push those off to the Apple Watch, and then have it just send back the results of whatever was going on. I'm probably talking out my ass here. I don't know if that's even possible, but I know things like distributed computing are possible.
Yeah.
I know things like, you know, like the SETI at Home project where they take little packets of things and they do things. Yeah. So I know that's possible. I just don't know if it's feasible right now with battery life and processor and data transfer rates wirelessly, if that's even possible. But that's the thing. What we all want is an application that does everything. I want to be able to turn on an app on my tablet in the morning or my smartphone.
Yeah.
Open up the project, have it give me an automatically generated weather report for my area, and not tell me all the bullshit that I don't need to know. Yeah. Tell me the things I need to know to do archaeology. You know, you know, if there's rain forecast in that little range over there, when is it forecast to start? You know, is there lightning in the area?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. I want to know all those things. And then once I, you know, accept that weather report, and that's part of my safety briefing now, you know, I can say, hey, you know, we included this weather report in our safety. It'll then bring up some safety topics. I can talk about those because in a lot of projects, you have to do safety every day.
True.
And on every project, you should do safety every day, but you know, whatever. And then we move right into, crew selection, you know, because you might change crews out every day. Sometimes people shift one from one to the next. Sometimes somebody's sick. Sometimes you got to move someone around for some reason. So you can probably just verify yesterday's crews or say, nope, I'm going to move, you know, Richie over here and this person over here and do that. And now your crews are set up and you can transmit that data to the other tablets that are sitting there right there. Now they have the information and the setup for the day.
Yeah.
And you have your goals. You know, the crew chief can be figuring out their goals on the way out into the field. Hey, I want crew one to do this many acres over here, crew two to do this, and crew three to do this. And by the time you stop, they can send out all that information and then be done with it. And then the easy stuff, site recording. We're already doing that. So record your data, do your things, throw it to your augmented reality glasses, do all that stuff. But then when you're done, the system should be able to go over what you found and say there are deficiencies here that don't meet the standard that you've set up as your parameters. You know, like you didn't record enough information on this thing, you know, before you leave the site. You need to do this. You need to do this. Like, I downloaded Grammarly for my computer and it's constantly checking everything in all the apps that I use because I put it on the computer. So no matter what I type in, whether it's a Word document or a Pages document or on the internet or somewhere, it's checking my typing. So why can't something just do that for all the things that you're doing, you know, and check it not just for, because when you check for grammar, you're just checking what's presented against the standard set of rules.
Yeah.
That's all that's doing. So when you think of grammar checking, which we've been doing for decades now, it's really just choosing different rules that you're going to apply to your site records. And the rules I want aren't, is there verbs here, but, or are there verbs here? But the rule is, did I take measurements on that projectile point? you know, and if I did take measurements, did I take three measurements or did I only do two? And I need to go back because I forgot to get the thickness, you know, something like that. And it should be able to do that. And if I, set in those parameters for the project and I say, listen, we're going to find these, but because of one reason or another, we're not taking this measurement ever. We're just not because it's not required or whatever the deal is. Or we're going to take this extra measurement. You know, that's required. Then we can, you know, we can do that and it will prompt us for that. So you set your own rules. There's a base set of rules that you can go by, but you set your own rules and then it does that. And then of course, at the end, it does everything for you regarding site record creation, bringing in the GIS data, you know, making the maps, doing all those things. All that stuff should be just automated. We do so much just busy work with that stuff.
And I'd also like to throw in that wish list, something that you can take on, something that basically you can send to different, like you can just, it doesn't matter. Like you start out in your phone in the morning and then you shut that down. Then you pull out your tablet in the field.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, that's like the thing that I liked about the graphic design program. I was talking about Gravit Designer. You can send it. I was playing with it. I was playing with it on my laptop, and then I was playing with it on the desktop. And then I assumed that if I had a Chromebook, I could play with it on there, and it's seamless.
Yeah.
There's no conversion.
Yeah.
So if you could do that, so basically if everyone could just like have an app that was cross-device, or I don't know, cross-device, more like device compatible.
Well, that's one reason we use Audition at the Archaeology Podcast Network, because Adobe Audition yeah. is a great cross-platform recording tool. Now, I wish it worked on tablets and stuff like that. That's the only thing it doesn't do that you're saying.
Yeah.
But what it does do, and I guess Audition probably isn't the best the best one for this. Microsoft Word probably is.
Yeah.
Everybody uses Word. I have Word through Office 365 on my phone, my tablets, my computer, and I can edit a document on my phone, pick it up on my tablet via iCloud or Dropbox or OneDrive.
Yeah.
And then keep editing it, and then move that over to my computer and keep editing that, send it to Richie, and he could edit it on his Windows computer, throw it to his Android tablet, if he had one, and then move it over to your Android phone, and then send it back over to me to my iPhone.
See?
All without losing anything. Now, you could lose some fonts and things like that, but that's what's installed on your computer.
True.
Certain computers, like Microsoft doesn't download Helvetica as a font, but Apple lives on Helvetica.
You're telling me.
But you can still put it on there. Yeah. It's just not a standard font that's available for Windows.
True.
It's just an example of a font that might not be everywhere. I mean, most fonts, I think, are probably all over the place. Most of the standard ones people
they
use.
Are.
Like, everybody has Times New Roman.
Yeah.
Everybody has Arial, you know, things like that. So, I mean, I know a lot of archaeology companies that use Arial.
Wait,
but,
really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I kind of like it, though. It's a little less harsh than Times New Roman.
Yeah.
You know? But
maybe it's just my college-trained eyes.
I don't know. Maybe.
Or the fact that I used to learn. The fact that I learned to write on a typewriter.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's we basically want one app to rule them all.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do it well without crashing.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a lot to ask.
No, I mean, Dropbox does it. Word does it.
Yeah, and you know, I want to know why this universal application that works on all devices and does all the things. I want to know why it's so hard. And I'm saying this without actually having done it, but I want to know why it's so hard to get like development interest for this. You know, if you approached a developer and said, "Hey, it's gonna," because it would probably cost. You know, you'd have a serious development team with all these different components, and to get them all to work together, right?
Yeah.
You need a lot of developers on task if you're going to do this in any sort of amount of time that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, you'd probably need close to $1 million, just from what I know, to push out a version one that is actually functional. That's another problem with archaeology. Like, I can push out a version one of Angry Birds, and as long as I can fling birds into bricks, that's fine. I don't need to polish it that much, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm going to push out a version one of a 1.0 of a archaeology application, that thing better not fail or I lost all my data. So a version one of an archaeology application actually is probably like somebody else's version 3 or 4. You know, it has to be higher end for people to trust it. Otherwise, they're just going back to paper. But the thing is, if you spend the money, you do the user testing, you do the, you know, you push out an alpha, not just a beta, you push out an alpha so you can test internally.
Well, that's the important part.
I know. And then you put this in front of like focus groups too, because when you're just a handful of people working on something, you have to understand that you don't have all the possible permutations of what this could be used for. I mean, it's just your own personal experiences. So bring other people into the room, do it multiple times, take an average, and then build that application and then test it, put it out there. And
make sure it does that one thing well. Because, you know, I feel like so many app developers are trying to make something that is like, I don't know, that's like for everyone, but it can't be for everyone.
Right. And that might be the case. If I had $1 million in app development right now, we would probably put an app out in 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
Okay. But that app would not be the full-blown whiz-bang crazy app that we want. That app would be an app we'd have to prioritize. We'd have to say, okay, we want our app to do these 50 different things, right?
Yeah.
But this one thing, if it doesn't do that, it's completely useless.
See?
Which is basically site recording and form export.
Yeah.
So if I make it do that and I make it awesome, that's great. And now I can add project management. Then I can add weather.
Yeah.
Then I can add drawing capabilities.
Yeah.
Because those aren't 100% necessary,
no,
but they're great to have.
Yeah.
And then I can start adding things and I can make those modules. I can be building those in the background and add them to the tablet.
It's like when the computer is, then the personal computer is first being developed, you know, it wasn't what it is now. The thing that caught people's attention and got personal computers to be popular was the fact was spreadsheet programs.
Yeah.
One thing.
I know.
One thing.
I think I saw a TED Talk on that recently on the spreadsheets, the guy that like invented the spreadsheet.
Neat.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet on how they did it and how they basically invented what all spreadsheets are today. And it really hasn't changed.
Ah.
You know, I mean, they're still the same they were in this is like the late 60s, early 70s, basically.
Neat.
Yeah, so.
But I mean, what you're talking about is almost like, you know, most app developers seem to be trying to develop MS Office instead of like trying to start with Excel.
Right.
Because, you know, it can't be everything to everyone right now.
That's a good point. Because Microsoft didn't start with Office.
No.
You know, they started with Word, basically. Well, probably Excel and Word together.
Yeah.
You know, but, and then they added other things, you know, as they came along. So, and even Microsoft realizes that it can't all and shouldn't be in one application. You know, they're still separate applications that do different things.
Yeah.
Which does make sense. But I think for site recording, I really don't think unless it was a different model. I'm trying to imagine if you were trying to reduce processor power and reduce what's loaded up into the device's RAM, basically. So if I don't need to draw anything, maybe that module shouldn't load. But unless I have the ability to bring that into active memory, you know, whenever I call it up, I could have separate applications on the device, but as long as they all talk to each other.
Oh my God. You know? I mean, almost like the Adobe Creative Cloud.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, like when I'm working in Premiere, Adobe Premiere for video editing, and I need to edit an audio file more robustly than Premiere allows me to, I can send it straight to Audition. It automatically creates a copy of that file for Audition. I do what I need to do, and all I have to do is close Audition. I don't have to do anything. I just close it.
Yeah.
And that file that I just modified is now sitting in my box in Premiere, and it's loaded up into my movie.
Yeah, and you note that each of those individual apps works properly on its own.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to start somewhere.
Exactly.
Not to keep hammering home that point, but it's just true.
It's totally true. All right. Well, I think that's it for this show.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably not going to have very many links in the show notes because all this stuff we mentioned a lot of things, but not, it was really just in passing.
Yeah.
There's no links to things that don't exist. So,
true.
So I think we'll probably call it right there.
Yeah.
Send us in your app wish list. I have zero money to put in development, so I won't steal your idea. You can be confident of that.
Or if you want to give Chris $1 million to develop an app.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we've got the blueprints.
Yeah.
We know what to do.
Yeah.
We know it needs to be there. We just need the developers to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. And I'm sitting in a room full of developers
now.
So there's like 20 developers in the building I'm currently in. And we can look back and probably see development happening on some computer screens. I'm not really sure. But anyway, yeah, send us your check for $1 million. I'll cut you in, make you a partner. And we'll go from there. So anyway, thanks for listening to the Archaeotech podcast. And hopefully Paul will be joining us soon. I'm not sure if we'll get him on by the next episode because I am out of town all next week in podcast movement when you're hearing this live.
Plus it's the beginning of the school year.
Yeah. Busy man. So, but I'm looking forward to having a more regular co-host again. And thanks for Richie for filling in. And I'm sure you're always here to fill in whenever we need it. And maybe we'll just make it a 3-person show too. And you can just come over and come every time. There's no reason Archaeotech has to be 2 people.
True. Just like you call us Archaeology.
That's right.
2 people.
That's right. So if you're listening to this on Thursday as it came out, check out You Call This Archaeology. I'm not sure how we're doing it because I'll be in Los Angeles. So,
interesting.
Richie and I'll have to figure that out ahead of time. We might do it on Saturday when I get home. We'll see.
Yeah,
but,
that's fine.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. All right. Thanks for listening and leave a comment and send us your wish list.
Yay.
That's it for another episode of the Archaeotech Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/Archaeotech.
If you like the show and want to comment, please do. You can leave comments about this or any other episode on the website or on the iTunes page for this episode. You can also email us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com or use the contact form on the podcast webpage. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or tweet your questions with the hashtag Archaeotech or tag @ArcPodNet in your tweet. Please share the link to this show wherever you saw it. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, you can do so on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. You can also type the name of the podcast into your favorite podcasting app and subscribe that way. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and leave a review of the show. It helps us get noticed so more people can find our podcast and benefit from the content. Also, send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.